Well, soybeans are among the, I think, the top crops grown by Wisconsin farmers, right up there with corn. And we're going to get an update now about the soybean industry. Larry Mueller here, by the way. My guest, Tony Melanthin. Tony is the United Soybean Board Director representing Wisconsin, and also farms in Ogallala, Wisconsin. So we'll talk with him about the soybean situation, and let us know your questions about soybean farming. Do you grow soybeans maybe on your farm? What was the crop like this year for you? If you're not in the ag business, what questions do you have about soybeans? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email to talk@wpr.org. Tony Melanthin, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm excited to be on, and again, just thank you for letting me come on to your show and talk about the wonderful world of soybeans.
Well, tell us first about your farm. You got Melanthin Farms. Talk about what you grow and how long this farm has been part of the family.
Right, yeah. So on our farm, we grow corn and soybeans. I farm alongside my dad. He started farming in 1981, but my grandpa started this farm when he moved up from southern Wisconsin from his, farm he grew up on. He moved up here in 1965. So we've been on this farmstead since 1965. Started out as your traditional Wisconsin dairy farm, and in the late 90s, my parents made the decision to transition from dairy farming to row crop farming. And when we did that, we had grown soybeans, while we still had cows, but then we increased the soybean acreage after that.
Yeah, and soybeans, I mean, we grow a lot of soybeans here in Wisconsin. I think it's like 100 million bushels or something like that. It's a lot.
Yes, about 100 million bushels. I think it's a little north of that nowadays, but it's just north of 100 million. And it, it all kind of depends on the year, how the yields are and crop rotation wise, but that's a good round number to say.
So, and what was the crop like this year? Pretty good, I've heard.
Yeah, for us, I'm here in western Wisconsin, and so for us, the crop has been, I'd say, above average, but pretty good, actually. So, we're really happy with the yields, and prices have come around recently.
What are they at, about $10 a bushel or thereabouts, or...
Yeah, they've come around a little more now. So now they're about $10.50. So
that's if you do the math on that, if you figured 100 million bushels, you're talking more than $1 billion there in sales, or $1 billion in terms of the economy of the state. Well, maybe $1.5 billion.
Absolutely, I don't have that number exactly. And that's just the soybean sales part. Obviously, when you have farms in the rural communities, that's supporting jobs, equipment dealerships, local co-ops, stuff like that. Farming is really, in my opinion, the lifeblood of rural America, and whether that's dairy farming, crop farming, or any other type of farming.
Gregory in Niagara has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Gregory.
Yeah, hey, Larry. Thanks for having the guest on. The question is, we depend on other countries to buy soybeans from us, and it always seems like Americans don't really consume soybeans. And I talked to a farmer, his name's Jeff, he works with me, and he said that if you consume too much soybeans, they can be poisonous for you, but I don't believe that. I just want to hear what the guest speaker would say about that.
Yeah. All right, Greg, thank you for calling. Well, I suppose if you ate too much of anything, it could be a problem, but go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, and I'm not the expert in the dietetics of it. I do know, food-grade soybeans are safe for human consumption. There is a great institute. It's called the Soy Nutrition Institute, and you can look them up, and you can go to their website. And not only do they have a lot of great recipes for utilizing soy in human diets, but it also talks about, the health benefits of it. So I can't speak to that, the in-depth details. I know there is a lot of soy consumption globally. So, maybe it's partially how soy is processed. I know when you're talking about ruminant animals, so cows and stuff, soy typically needs to be roasted, and I'm not a nutritionist as far as the reasoning why.
Yeah. All right, Greg, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. David in New Richmond, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, David.
Hey, Larry, since you brought up the vast dollar amounts there that this crop could bring to the state, I'd be curious for your guest to tell us what his crop input costs are compared to what he's looking to make per bushel. And seeing how our administration recently sent a bunch of money to Argentina, who turned around and sold their majority of their soybean crop to China, how of that is affecting the market.
Okay.
Yeah, so as far as a break even per bushel, I know I sounded excited to be able to sell 1050 beans, but that's really just because a month ago they were $9. 1050 beans is, depending on where your yields come in, that's roughly your break even. Each operation's a little different. Some operations, the break even is probably $11 a bushel. Some operations, it may be 10, but input costs, and it doesn't matter which input you're talking about, if you're talking about seed, fertilizer, equipment, interest rates, all of it has really gone up significantly in the last couple of years, and that has brought our cost of production up as well. So $10.50 to $11 for a lot of farms, that's what a lot of farms need to keep the lights on, essentially.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily you're making a whole bunch of money here if your break-even point is the same as what you're selling it for.
Correct.
What? But and David mentioned the sort of international part of it, and I think, well, how much do we export of our crop? It's a good percentage of our crop goes elsewhere.
Yeah, it's a little over half of our crop.
And
so globally, nationwide, it's a little over half of our soybean crop.
Yeah, and I think it's even a little higher for Wisconsin than half. But
yes, it is.
But then we're selling to who? We got three main trade partners, I think, on it. I think.
Yes. Three main would be a good way to put it. China purchases a lot or has in the past. Mexico, European Union. And then there's a lot of Southeast Asia countries. And we're beginning to open markets in the Middle East and North Africa for U.S. soy as well. So I guess, China accounts for roughly 60% of the global soybean trade. So that obviously is the big player in the market.
Yeah.
So
I think we also trade a lot with Canada and Mexico as well. The tariffs probably have made maybe we can spend a little time talking about tariffs after we take a look at the news. But Somebody else was asking about varieties. Do you grow a lot of varieties?
Yes, there are a lot of options out there. There's, you know, when it comes to purchasing seed, no matter what quote unquote brand you purchase from, your seed really comes from four, maybe five different seed company genetics. So each company then makes varieties that are tailored to growing regions and, you know, north versus south and east versus west and soil type and whatnot. So it can get pretty complex as far as choosing the right variety for your farm. But, you know, when we were talking about inputs, that is part of it. When, you know, four or five companies control pretty much the entire genetic pool of your soybean seed, you know, there's only so much you can do.
Tony Melanthan, our guest, we're talking soybeans with him today, and he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. I will get into tariffs and that kind of situation as well as we visit with him, and hope you'll join in as well. We're going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on WPR News, and then we'll be back with Tony. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here talking about the soybean industry in Wisconsin right now with our guest, Tony Melanthan. He's the United Soybean Board Director representing the state of Wisconsin. He also farms in Ogallala. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What are your questions about maybe commodity markets and how farmers fit in them? Let us know your questions. Give a call at 800-642-1234. It's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Tony, we just heard in the news President Trump was commenting on, in general, about tariffs. But what about the tariff situation as it relates to soybeans now?
Right. So I think tariffs in regards to soybeans, I feel like that's ever changing, whether it's a news story or a tweet or a Truth Social post. Any one of those things can move the market 20, 25 cents. One thing we have noticed, it just creates a little different ebbs and flows in the soybean world. One thing that I will note, it has given us an opportunity as the Brazilians have essentially torn down rainforest to sell China soybeans. Their quality has diminished significantly, and this has given us an opportunity to showcase the higher quality U.S. soybeans to buyers that maybe were just looking at price per bushel or price per ton versus the actual value and quality that you get. So if I kind of want to spin a positive out of this, that has given us that opportunity that otherwise was hard to achieve.
So the tariffs themselves, I think he made a deal with China to at least cut back the amount of tariff, right?
I believe you're right. I don't even know if I know all the final details of it. And part of that agreement, my understanding is, you know, China promising minimum commitments of U.S. soy over the next 3 to 4 years.
But other than that, it's still kind of up in the air, you're saying?
Yeah, I don't know if up in the air is the right word. I think... Just maybe with harvest, I haven't been kept in touch as much with it, but I believe, you know, it's just an ever-changing dynamic, and until all the dust settles, I'm not sure exactly end of the day where it's going to settle at.
Mike in La Crosse has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mike.
Yes, I'm wondering about alternative uses in the United States for soybeans instead of exporting them. You talked about it towards the end of the last hour about how we didn't use that many soybeans in the United States, but we produce so many of them, primarily for export. So what are alternative uses? I know there, also if you could talk about crop rotation, the land that we use for soybeans, is that alternately used to produce corn? And is that corn that's used for ethanol, or is it corn that's used for animal feed? Or, and why, since we have a glut of soybeans here now, you make oil out of soybeans. How about producing more biodiesel or some other alternate sources for it? And also I'm talking about crop rotation. I know one of those things that's inserted into the crop rotation between corn and soybeans is sugar beets. And can we grow sugar beets in Wisconsin? Is there a market for those, and what are their uses?
I think you started to answer the question for me when you talked about biodiesel and renewable diesel. That is a great, great use of the soybeans. To back it up a little bit, when a farmer grows a soybean, then we sell it to an elevator. Essentially, down the road, a lot of the soybeans get crushed. So they separate out the what we call soybean meal, which is the animal feed part of it, with soybean oil. Now, that soybean oil can be used for human consumption, whether that be in your vegetable oils, your, dressings, stuff like that. But that oil can also be used for renewable diesel, biodiesel. And then conversely, the soybean meal, by and large, the soybean meal is consumed by animal agriculture. A lot of swine and poultry diets are heavy in soybean meal. So those are the areas that will, quote unquote, move the pile the fastest. However, there's always really, I think, innovative new uses for soybeans that we are creating. And creating is part of the checkoff. Some of that is soy foam. It's a firefighting foam that's PFAS-free. And so it's a very environmentally friendly foam that can fight fires. It has no environmental concern, to my knowledge. Can replace the PFAS foam that's currently being used. And I think that's a great usage. Will that move the pile? No, but you get a lot of small innovations like that, and you can. We are also used as environmentally friendly replacements for adhesives and paints. And, if you back up and you think of anything that's made out of petroleum, can essentially be replaced with soybeans.
Yeah. Well, it brings to mind the United Soybean Board. You mentioned checkoff, and some people may not be familiar with what that is, but what does the board do, and it's financed through farmer checkoffs, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes. So the United Soybean Board is, we call it the soybean checkoff. So essentially what that means is every time a United States soybean farmer sells soybeans, 0.5% goes to this checkoff. Now, of that 0.5%, half of it goes to the national checkoff, which is the United Soybean Board, and half of it goes to the state, whatever state those soybeans were grown in. And so it's essentially a self-voluntary assessment, and it provides a way for soybean farmers for us to pool together money. And what we like to say a lot of times when we're in meetings is we want to invest in projects and investments that the individual farmer can't. What is the checkoff doing that I can't on my own farm? So a lot of our investments are export market orientated as far as opening up, developing, and increasing current and future markets. And there's also a lot being spent on innovation as far as finding those new uses, whether it be soy foam, there's concrete sealant, there's asphalt replacement. One thing I haven't touched on that I think would be of really high interest in this state is there's a special type of soybean that's a high oleic soybean. And if you grow that, you can add that into the ration of dairy cattle, and it has benefits as far as milk fat components and production. So this is a differentiated soybean variety that has a higher end use, so to speak, where the soybean farmer can get a premium if they grow it, and conversely, the dairy farmer who's using it sees the benefit on their end as well.
So that's that's something that is part of, isn't it? I mean, the board itself, you invest a lot in research as well as in expanding markets.
Yes. There is a lot spent on soybean research as well. As far as, on the growing side, whether it be researching disease, insects, weed issues, and doing the research to find a way for farmers to overcome the issues we're facing in the field.
Yeah. And, this is soybeans, that crop needs to move in a year because there's another crop coming right after it.
Correct. They're not perishable, but yet, when you're in the business of raising a commodity, you're not in the business of holding on that commodity long term. You're in the business of raising it and selling it and moving it. So, yes, they store for over a year, but as a farmer's concerned, we need to move them because we need to make space for the next year's harvest.
And I think on your farm, you have your own even large-scale storage and dryers, do you not, for beans and corn?
We do, yes. We have grain bins and a grain dryer. Typically, you do not need to dry soybeans. You can typically harvest them straight out of the field at the ideal moisture. And then we do have bins as well. Roughly speaking, we have enough to store, two-thirds, three-quarters of our crop.
So that's pretty good. And you can store it that way for more than a year. Ideally, you want it gone within a year.
Well, yeah, I mean, will it keep over a year? Yes, but if we keep it in the bin for over a year, then the next year's harvest, instead of storing three-quarters of it, we'll only be able to store half of it. So really, we clean out our bins every year, and that's just how our business is set up.
John wants to know how if you use the futures market in your soybean operation, or do farmers in general use the futures market to sort of lock in a price?
Yeah, I would say there's a wide array of comfort level with using the futures market. We do on a limited basis. There's a lot of different contracts out there available for farmers for hedging and, getting a price locked in. A lot of farmers do use a combination of the futures market, some call options or just some options, whether they're call or puts, and just straight cash sales.
Yeah, we got a friend who has about 1,000 acres of soybeans, and he uses the futures market fairly extensively, but not entirely. I don't think. I'm not sure, but So it can be used in combination to kind of try and lock in some pricing before the actual the harvest and prices reveal themselves, I guess you could say. And somebody else is wondering, Kent in Reedstown actually emailed us, how much input and what kind of input do soybeans need, and are they GMO crops?
Okay, so for soybeans, you can grow GMO and non-GMO soybeans. There is a market for both. So it's hard to say without knowing the specific field. And I don't know the percentage in the state of Wisconsin. You know, the majority of it is a GMO crop, but Wisconsin has a very nice non-GMO market, both in the north and south. So disproportionately, Wisconsin grows more non-GMO soybeans than a lot of states.
What are the biggest challenges facing bean farmers right now? What's weighing heavily the most on their minds?
You know, I think overall, soybean farmers, we've been able to, you know, we know how to grow a good crop if Mother Nature plays with us. And, you know, a lot of people are really talking about how our input prices are just stuck and, you know, they don't come down when the price of soybeans come down, but they go up when the price of soybeans go up. And whether that's fertilizer, equipment, seed, you name it, there's just a lot of talk about really getting, you know, farmers feeling like they're getting pushed in a corner on the input side.
Yeah, that seems to happen in a lot of areas of agriculture these days. Aside from soybeans, I'm guessing anyway. And the prices, you know, the prices get determined by who?
Well, the price is supposed to be determined by the laws of supply and demand.
Yeah.
You know, but you're talking about the inputs, correct?
Yeah.
You know, there, you probably need to ask them that. Cause some days I don't really know. You know, we're very quickly told that the price of fertilizer goes up because the cost of oil went up and it transportation and cost all, but then when the price of oil goes down, you don't usually see fertilizer go down. And that you can pick any input and kind of come up with that scenario where there's usually a pretty quick explanation on why they need to charge more, but never an explanation on why they don't go down when the prices go down.
So what happens, Jill wants to know, what happens when there's not enough space to store the crops?
You know, we've never really had that issue in western Wisconsin here because of, you know, I'll say the river market and delivery markets. Sometimes we run out of quote-unquote bin space, but then a lot of times, whether it's an elevator or the farmer themselves, in this part of Wisconsin, we can deliver it to a terminal on the Mississippi River, and they load on barges and kind of get it away from this area. Now, when that happens, unless you have forward contracted some bushels, typically the price you receive is going to be quite a bit lower because there's a lot of bushels out there, and there's no incentive to pay much for those bushels because those are quote-unquote, the overflow bushels.
Yeah, so, and considerably less, if I'm not mistaken.
Most years, yes. Yep.
Yeah, so that's not a good thing. Well, it's supply and demand kind of, I guess. The board itself, the United Soybean Board, it is made up of farmers, is it not?
Yes. Yep, it is. There's 77 farmer leaders on there. We do have a staff and a CEO, but the board itself is made up of farmers. The organization is farmer-led, farmer-driven. We really do believe strongly in that.
That makes a lot of sense, I think, because you're the people, men and women, who are doing the work, and to have that voice, I think you would have a hard time with a checkoff if you didn't have the strong farmer representation that you have. I'm pretty sure of that. Kathy in Fredonia, we'll go to you. Hi, Kathy.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
I'd like you to touch a little bit on the use of crop insurance and how that can affect our bottom line, and what some of the banks require of that.
Okay. Crop insurance.
Sure. Yep. So crop insurance is a tool that's available to every farmer. So essentially what happens in the late winter, in the month of February, do you average out what the price of soybeans are, the November contract, and that's what the quote-unquote guarantee price is that a farmer can purchase, and then they can insure a number of bushels per acre based on their production history. Now, you cannot insure 100%. A lot of farmers insure, 75, 80%. You can go up to 85%. And then as far as that being part of the bottom line, I would say it helps put in, a floor, so to speak. It is difficult when commodity prices are low or at break even. You are still only insuring 75 to 80%. So you still do have a 20% risk there. And as far as the banking institutions go, a lot of banks will require crop insurance to get operating notes to essentially get a loan to buy the inputs to put the upcoming crop in.
And what is, there must be some kind of pricing. How much does it cost to insure?
Yeah, that all varies greatly depending on the level of insurance that you purchase and the county that you're in. But there's, you can get it anywhere from probably $10 to $40 an acre, depending on how aggressive you want to be.
Okay, and in your mind, is it a good thing?
I think it is. Yep, in my mind, it is. We utilize it on our farm, and we're believers in it.
Through all this, what gives you hope for the future of soybean farmers in Wisconsin?
Well, as far as hope for the future, I think, I try to just boil it down and simplify it as the fact that sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the negativities. We'll talk about South America trying to outcompete us. Oh, is there going to be demand for our soybeans? All that. Well, when I think about it, I think about soybeans are really, they're a fuel source, but they're a protein. So as the world demands more protein in their diets, and it doesn't have to be soy protein, it could be animal protein, because soy is fed to a lot of the animals. As more protein is into these diets globally, I really just believe strongly in the future of soybean and in the future of U.S. soybeans.
Well, Tony, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. Appreciate it very much, and good luck with your own crops as we go into this as we're into the harvest season right now. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you very much.
Tony Melanthan is the United Soybean Board Director from Wisconsin. He represents the state, also farms in O'Galley. It's great to have him with us. And we're going to turn our attention from one bean to another bean, the coffee bean. And we'll talk about how you can make a really good cup of coffee coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller.